G'day and welcome back to the Shed of Basketball Truth. It is Studio 3 for Ball Don't Lie Australia, proudly brought to you by PCR Maps and, of course, local card shop of Woolloongabba / Mermaid Beach, helping us out with our Crack'em segment. I do need to start off with some slightly sad news this week. We won't be having a Crack'em this week, but I've popped down the local card shop of Woolloongabba over the weekend. I've had a chat with Rob. I've got some fresh new cards, and Crack'em will be back next week. This week, though, we've got an amazing special guest, Mark Alabakov from Bendigo Braves fame, head coach, undefeated season right through the NBL One. NBL One South, all the way through and on to Nationals. Absolutely amazing. All of that completely undefeated has gone through, and he'll be joining us shortly. Obviously, World Cup on for the Boomers at the moment. Some friendlies in China for the Opals. One apiece so far. Look, it's going well. But for the Opals, for the Boomers, look, hang in there, guys. Hang in there. Every World Cup, Olympics, whatever it is, every single one, we lose a game somewhere. We've just lost one a little bit early. I think it really did kind of show how we are missing that piece that is Jock Landale. Especially against Germany, had some really big, strong bigs. Of course, in someone I haven't always spoken politely about in Daniel Theiss. And of course, Schroeder, the man who dropped the bag, didn't drop the ball in the game, was absolutely explosive. And felt like he was able to get to wherever he needed to get to. We ended up dropping that one. Blood rule, whatever you want to call it. Slow start. There was some defensive moments where Germany was just allowed to have some quick short runs. All a little bit tough. But then, of course, we jump forward to the Japan game. Were able to jump out to that early halftime lead. Didn't put the foot right on the throat, but kept that winning margin and are able to close out the game by 20. A little bit different when the team doesn't have such strength and depth in their bigs rotation. But, will be interesting to see if we can get that offense rolling like we did in that game and really, potentially maybe a little bit more of an outside game. But Xavier Cooks was absolutely amazing. Excuse me. Josh Green, defensive role with a sprinkle of offense in there as well. Really showed why he's been picked for this Boomers team. Just absolutely fantastic. Obviously, a little bit more offense from his point of view would be great, but what he brings defensively was truly fantastic in that Japan game. Of course, Giddy, who's come quite a long way since those first couple of friendlies here in Australia, where it felt like he just wasn't quite aggressive enough. He definitely showed some of that aggression in his driving in that Japan game for sure. Slovenia next. Looks like it's going to be Slovenia next as we record, which of course means Luka Doncic. How do you stop Slovenia and Luka? I think you've just got to do your best to slow Luka down, and that's very easy to say, hard to do. This one's going to be one with defense. Going to have to slow them down. He's going to still score. You're not going to be able to choke him completely. There's no way that's going to happen at this level and at this stage of his career. He's come on. He's got a couple more years on last time Boomers faced him and Slovenia, and he's grown in maturity and all sorts since then. So you can't stop, you can only slow, and hopefully from an Australian point of view, we're able to get that done. But it's a nice problem we're having with the boomers at the moment. In the past, it's been 2-3, maybe four real amazing players, and then slotting in role players from different leagues around the world, around them. Now it almost feels as if we've got we've got a lot of talent, and we're just trying to find ways to fit it together. And it seems very matchup dependent on how it looks at the moment. But for the future, I think things very much look good for this World Cup. Well, obviously we're effectively in the position now where we just got to win our way out. So look, fingers crossed. But look, let's get to our chat to Mark, and his amazing season with the Bendigo Braves as the NBL One North Women's National Champions. In the Bendigo Braves, they had an absolutely amazing season, but we'll let him talk about it a little bit more. Let's do it.
That ball don't lie.
Never does.
All right, ball don't lie, listeners. We've got a returning guest, and he's, the things he's done since being on the show. This is further proof of what we like to call the ball don't lie bump. When players, coaches, officials come on the show, seems like, all the time we have these amazing stories of, these amazing, character arcs and play or whatever it is just goes through the roof. Mark, head coach, of Bendigo Braves. If you haven't heard of them, undefeated national champs. Of course you've heard of them. We've been talking about them on the show over the last couple of weeks, of course. Absolutely huge. Mark, welcome back to the show.
I'm stoked to be back into it. And I think you're right. The bump worked. So thank you.
Mate, you're most welcome. Everyone's had a bump who's been on the show. Almost everyone, including your own Meg McKay, of course, who has experienced a little bit of the ball don't lie bump. She's been playing absolutely amazing of late. But mate, let's get in. Since we last had you on the show, you've been on a bit of a basketball journey. Let's start with the Braves last season. I believe you came up short in that semi-final loss.
In the grand final, actually. Grand final, so it was,
yes.
That's even more heartbreaking, but, we had a tremendous run, that season. We were led by, the Opals captain, Tess Magin, and, we're able to put together a heck of a season where we'd only lost one game for the year by a single point. And we had the number one ranked offense in the league and, the number eight ranked defense. So that'll be a talking point for a little bit later on. But I think that was probably our undoing come grand final time. We weren't able to curb the scoring punch in the third quarter from the Ringwood Hawks, and they were tremendous and pipped us in that one. And heartbreaking, and had to sit with the emotions of that for 12 months before we geared up again to have a crack second time around.
Look, and in the off season, you did start with you had the opportunity, to jump behind the microphone and get in some commentating. I absolutely love commentating. It's one of my favorite things to do. How did you find the time? How did you find it behind the mic? And did you have to dial down in a language sense yourself at all, or was it a smooth transition?
A little bit of both. I think there was a lot of it that felt natural, where, I was watching and talking about something that I knew intimately well. So that was both the league, individuals within it, watching the action unfold and being able to talk about basketball and explain, the game within the game that I was viewing for the layman viewer, so to speak. So that felt really comfortable. And the more media that I had been doing, a comfort behind the mic sort of emerged too. I think being able to be on a headset and not camera facing, especially as an on-ramp, was something that was disarming of any fear for me. But it was something that I really enjoyed. I mean, ultimately, I exist to be a coach, so that's my passion and what I'd love to be doing. But where there was an opportunity to partake in the WNBL this past season as a coach or an assistant, this felt like a logical fit to be able to share the game and be able to contribute to the WNBL as a league, but women's sport holistically, you know, in being able to share my knowledge, you know, gained over 212 games and over a decade within that competition, it felt like a natural fit for right now.
Awesome. Awesome. Now, I do have to admit, I do love when you're in the commentary booth and everyone's facing the game. It just feels natural. I find the same when everyone's facing the other way away from you, the camera's not on and all that sort of stuff. You're just talking to a mate basically about basketball, and there's not much better than that. I find, mate, brave season, obviously it ends all magically, but let's go back to, you know, the start and the regular season. Can you talk us through the journey? Because, you know, while you've gone, I believe it was 22-0 this year, you know, there's more than just those numbers. So what was, walk us a little bit through some of the highlights for you in that regular season.
Yeah, well, it started a little bit challenging. So we had, you know, Tess Madgen decided to take the NBL one season off, obviously recovering from a knee injury that sidelined her for even the bulk of the WNBL season. And then we lost our captain, Abby Wareung, to her home club, Ballarat. So you lose two really key pieces within your lineup and two influential figures that were able to carry you to, you know, grand final berth the season prior. And it was incredibly difficult to try to find, you know, suitable replacements that fit the group that we'd currently had. So, you know, the success that we've been able to have most recently is, you know, been based upon seeds that we planted 3 years ago when, you know, when we first finally got to play with me at the helm of the program. But we were able to source Casey Burton, who I'd worked with in years prior, both in developmental pathways for Basketball Victoria and then with the Melbourne Boomers, but who also played for me in one of the last years of the Siebel competition when I coached the Melbourne Tigers before I'd moved to Sydney to be the assistant coach with Cheryl Chambers with the Sydney Uni Flames. And, you know, we've got a mutual respect and trust. And I thought she would be a perfect fit for our lineup with the defense she brings, her physical size at 6 foot, 6 foot one, and the rebounding that she can provide as well. You know, those were key areas, I guess, that I identified out of the grand final heartbreak that we'd had the year prior. We wanted to get better defensively and in rebounding the basketball, and then ideally, you know, taller if we can. And I can't stretch the lineup that we have or the Braves players that were emerging, but you know, we could recruit some of those things and then we could emphasize some others. And then I went out and had my heart set on Amy Atwell. I've been following her college career for a long time, and you know, there was a world where she was going to join us even last season, returning from college before her career just took a rocket strapped to the back of it with a fantastic March Madness. And then she got an opportunity with the Los Angeles Sparks in the WNBA. And then that made her inaccessible for that period of time. So to bring her in was a priority. Again, another great rebounder, underrated defender, and over 6 foot, and obviously can shoot the basketball at a world-class level. So that was going to complement you know, the interior presence of Megan McKay, but then also give us perimeter shooting, you know, which was going to be a headache for teams to deal with, or something that we could utilize both for what it is, but the advantages that we could create by the gravity that she would have on the perimeter. So that was the recruiting piece for us. And then we had a lot of retention, you know, throughout the rest of the roster. And then putting the team together through the early part of the season, I mean, we weren't without challenge. So while we had the undefeated season, like you mentioned, it's, you know, it's something that I'm so proud about, but is also, you know, you have an element of luck to that. And all you've got to try to do as a coach is increase your luck surface area so that, you know, you're able to get more of it. Hopefully, if you build a system that's robust enough and a culture and a camaraderie within a group. But we played game one against Frankston, who was, you know, within that finals picture and in the top two or three for the bulk of the season, played them in round one without Meg McKay and without Amy Atwell, and were able to get over the line with, you know, a depleted lineup in terms of key personnel with, you know, high level experience. And then we went on to have the early part of the season. You know, we were able to string a bunch of wins together, having Meg back within the lineup, but still playing without Amy. And then Amy was able to get an opportunity with the Australian Opals for the FIBA Asia Cup. So we played, I think, a total of about nine games without her. But, you know, testament to what we've been able to build over the past 3 years. It became a real case of plug and play, and you know, athletes had had enough tangible demonstration of their ability to contribute within a role. And again, our system, you know, aligned with that, where we could, you know, plug and play different athletes or just tilt the ways that we created advantages, but still were able to do those things to put score on the board. You know, as I mentioned earlier, defense was a massive focus for us. And then that became a system, again, similarly, where we were able to accentuate the positives within an individual athlete, whoever was available at that point in time, and try to hide, you know, any negatives while we worked on those things at the same time. So that was something that, or I guess that stability or that systemized approach that was really process-driven week in, week out, was something that drove us. You know, we were never too worried about results, you know, especially as they started to stack up. I think it was more of a media narrative, you know, how long can the streak go? Or we had people always asking the question, like, you know, before finals, do you need to lose one, you know, just to get the monkey off your back? But, you know, my answer was always absolutely not. You know, we exist in this game to try to win, and we've got a bunch of competitors, and you know, we learnt that competitive streak by, you know, the example that Tess Madgen set in her time with the program, but then, you know, in a different way, but, you know, in a highly competitive way, Kelly Wilson exudes, you know, as a bona fide winner within the program. So, you know, part of it was learned and by osmosis got drip fed into the group that we had, the emerging Braves, and then the players that were retained. But then, you know, you had this fearless leader that, you know, Kelly Wilson's 5 foot nothing, and you know, you wouldn't call her the fastest or most athletic player, but is just such a game manager and has such an IQ, almost a sixth sense for the sport of basketball, and a great alignment between the two of us, almost a shared lens that we have when we watch the game. There were so many occasions when I would go to her and see an opportunity, either offensively or defensively, and you know, say to Kel, like, in the next huddle, can you communicate this? And she'll have already done it before I've flagged it, or nice. Vice versa. She'll come over to me on the sideline and be like, Mark, we need to do this. And I'll be like, yep, I've, you know, the sub that's coming in is about to communicate that to everybody within the next huddle that you have. So, you know, we've got a great relationship together and cut from the same cloth in the way that we view the game, you know, and probably dispels, you know, there's a, for those that are, you know, cynical of the success that we've had, there's the thought that because we have Kelly or some of the experienced players that we have, that they quote unquote coach themselves. I won't name who it is, but there was a pre-game this season where we went on the road and we played a team, and the opposition coach asked me where my assistants were, and my assistants are Nathan Batchelor, who also co-coaches our youth league team. So they had a game on the same night, so he was absent coaching his team. And the other assistant is Michael Gibbons, who's Kelly Wilson's husband and a great analytical mind. And they had a babysitter for their child, Teddy, pull out at the last minute. So he had to be dad at home. So I was coaching by myself, and this opposition coach said, oh, your team doesn't need any coaches anyway. They can coach themselves. So that was an interesting take. But, you know, it couldn't be further from the truth. The trust and respect and the player-coach relationships that we have in this program, I mean, you can ask any of them. I think that the success that we've had, and you can view any of the courtside interactions or in huddles that we've got, you know, it's a real team effort and total team effort, and one that I'm really, really proud of.
Yeah, it's it sort of feeds into that idea that that people seem to forget. You know, basketball isn't a game that can be done, you know, with, you know, with just one person, or like it genuinely takes a real crew. And you know, you'll always find the best people in this game of basketball have really amazing people around them. And there's just no way of getting around that. It's not an individual game. Never has been. Never will be. In that sense. There are some photos, I believe, from the South Grand Final of you pointing in one direction with your hand, and there's a group of referees huddling very late in the game. And can you talk us through? I believe you even popped it up on your Facebook and sorry, on your Insta about how your everything sort of stopped in that moment. Can you paint a picture of what was happening for you in that moment, in that game?
Well, it was the longest 15 seconds of my life while that call got deliberated. So we had gone through, I mean, obviously we were successful ultimately in the end, but, we've had one of the things being, the successful program that we've been in the past three seasons, and especially this season with that undefeated streak, is that you play every team and you get their best shot. So there's a fearlessness that they play with. There's a freeness that they play with. And both of those things, I mean, you can ask anybody, they're conducive to elite level performance and sustained performance. So you can have a look at any game throughout the season. We cop a barrage of a team's 11 out of 10 performance for first quarters, and the more talented teams for whole games. And it becomes a real challenge to try to weather that storm, reestablish the Bendigo Braves style of play on the game, and then be able to strategically try to land a plane, so to speak, and get yourself a result. And Waverley, in the three times that we played them throughout the season, threw everything in the kitchen sink and so many different things to try to disrupt us. And a lot of them did. And we had to try to find counter moves to their moves, in a real chess match, to be able to put our noses in front at the finish line. So, we got thrown a little bit of a loop in that grand final with Megan McKay getting into some early foul trouble, which was incredibly challenging. She's been such a big part of what we've done, and just the night prior had been awarded league MVP, which she's very, very deserving of. But it changed the way that we played and how that we had to create advantages. So we used Amy quite a lot for that. She was able to shoot the ball at an exceptionally high level for us in that first half and carry us and keep us in the contest. And I'm managing Meg's loading through, the whole, first three quarters with the philosophy that I'd learned from watching a Jeff Van Gundy clinic that, if a player has more fouls than the quarter that you're in, well, that's your cue to keep them out of the game. But as soon as it's level, so she had three fouls, we put her in the third quarter and she picked up one really quick one, you hold her till the fourth quarter. So Amy fouls out, but we're in the fourth quarter, so Meg can come in. So I'm thinking, okay, well, we've got, this post presence that can also create advantages for us again in a different way. So while Amy was coming out of the game, Meg was coming in. So I still had comfort in the fact that I was going to be able to orchestrate, us in a way that can create advantages. So we keep our noses in front. And then Maddie Sexton, who's been one of the two OGs that we call them, one of the two athletes that her and Cass McLean that have been with me from the very start, from the COVID cancelled 2020 season. She played a whole lot in that grand final, probably more than she had through the course of the season as our sixth woman, so to speak, and was doing exceptionally well, and ended up having to guard Bec Cole, who, having worked with her and admired her from afar, is one of the most lethal perimeter scorers and dangerous perimeter scorers that there is in the country. And there's this period of play where it's crucial. We've got our noses in front, but, Waverley's got one last push in them and Beck's got the ball on the wing. And you've just seen this thing play out a bunch of times where, Beck goes, she puts the ball to the floor on her right hand, gets into the paint and pulls up and shoots a jumper. And then, now they've got their tails up and, we're having to try to weather a storm really, really late in the piece when everybody's fatigued. And Maddie does an exceptional job of being able to keep her feet wider than Beck's, play defense, by keeping her feet in front of Collie's, but then be disruptive. And it was something that we wanted to do a whole lot more this season with hand pressure. So she tries to overplay Beck to her right hand to send her back towards the left. And Beck puts the ball in harm's way. And I've given them a license throughout the year. And they've tangibly done a heck of a job of, if you see it and you think you can get a clean poke at it, like, go after it. So Maddie Sexton has a poke at the basketball, knocks the ball. It comes off, like, clearly right in front of me, comes off Bec Cole's ankle out of bounds, giving us possession and, would have put us in the box seat with how many possessions were left in the game to be able to ice this one from the free throw line when they failed to stop the clock. And one ref immediately points to our direction and I'm like, yes, you're feeling the elation of, we're able to get ourselves a really big advantage that's going to put the game out of reach. But then, Beck, having the stature that she has, challenges the call, and then the two referees that are closest start to question their own interpretation. So they get together and start to review. So you're dealing with, you know, the stature of a player questioning a call that's obviously going to favor them. But, you know, I'm knowing that it's come off her, but I mean, she does what everybody else would do. I'd be pointing in our direction if the shoe was on the other foot as well.
Yep.
But you're just hoping that, you know, that clarity can prevail or they can go and review it. And it was the longest 15 seconds of my life. And I'm standing there and I'm like, Mark, don't get involved. Don't deliberate. You know, cooler heads will prevail. It clearly came off her ankle. You know, they're going to call it in our direction. But I had to question that the longer that we had to wait for this this call to be decided upon, I started to worry that it was going to go against us and in Waverley's favour, and started to plan in my head, well, you know, what do I do next? What's my counter move if this is in fact the case? But there was actually a really good video that Maddie Sexton's partner had been filming that late stage in the game, so picked up, you know, this great defensive play that she's made all on film, and then he took liberties to zoom in on Maddie's face, and there was probably about 20 different emotions from elation to fear to worry to disappointment to stress to anger to worry and fear again. And then finally, when the referee pointed in our direction, the elation, and she pumped both of her fists. It was just such a great moment, you know, obviously in terms of the context of the game. But for her, you know, she is an athlete that came back from college early, called for a meeting with me back in the late 2019. And we sat up and had a coffee, and she just said to me, she's like, Mark, I want to be an NBL One player, but I'm not going to hold you to ransom for it. See me play, increase your sample size of me, and just know that this is the destination that I want to get to. Help me get there as best you can. And there's no timeline for it. Like, I trust you. And the journey that she's gone on to go from that humble conversation and having the courage to stay patient to, within 12 months, she was our sixth woman. She was starting in the absence of Tess Madgen when Tess went to the Tokyo Olympics, to being able to be a key player in last season's push, you know, with that heartbreaking grand final loss, to then, when called upon, making essentially the championship winning play, you know, the one play that really put the nail in the coffin. You know, I'm so incredibly proud of her and stoked for her and the journey that she's been on as, you know, a relatively, you know, under the radar type of player. And I think an athlete that is capable of getting an opportunity as a development player at WNBL level, you know, and would be worthy of that type of next step within her individual career.
Yeah, look, it's always tough, especially with referees. When they come together, the longer they talk, the more you think they're going to go away from that initial call. And it's always tough. It's, you know, brutal in grand finals or, you know, elimination games. But yeah, as you say, you guys prevailed in the end and you got through it. One thing I am genuinely curious about, because I've spoken to a couple of players from different teams that have, you know, obviously won their division and gone on to nationals. What was the mindset like, you know, with the girls? Because from a couple of teams that I've spoken to, there's been a lot of almost a sense of the job was done. The job they were aiming to do in winning the NBL One, you know, conference was done, and nationals was just extra basketball. So what was the mindset like in the Bendigo Braves team?
Yeah, it was a lot of things. I think we all had this competitive streak that, you know, Bendigo has got such a storied legacy in the Siebel and NBL One competitions holistically. So they've been around for 40 years. They're a fixture within the Bendigo community. And other than the Nunawading Spectres, historically, the Bendigo Braves have been the most successful franchise at that tier or that level of competition, both in championships. I mean, the success of the Braves women led to, you know, the birth of the Bendigo spirit being a thing. And, you know, there's been, you know, you walk into the stadium, fantastic players that have got jerseys retired, and you walk in and you see all of the history there out on court six, you know, the Harrowers, the Fletchers, the Walshers, and then the men's side of things, you know, the Casses, the Harveys, the Hogans, that have been fixtures here. So it means a lot. Basketball means a lot to Bendigo, and we're all knowing that, but as a badge of honor, not a burden. I think I describe the NBL One South Conference, and I say this humbly, I believe it to be the most challenging and just littered with exceptional basketballers, the hardest conference to win in the NBL One program. Because you just roll in and you've got a stack of Opals, international players that represent their country, WNBL players. I think the density of that level of athlete is higher in the NBL One conference. And then as a result, the sophistication of the coaching, you know, needs to lift to match it. So you get challenged every single week. It was, you know, while proud of the undefeated season that we've had, you know, it's unheard of. The probability of being able to achieve that is so small. So we've been history making in doing that. But then once we'd gotten through, the best thing for us was to be able to win. And then within the next week, just roll on internationals like it's another game week. So that really helped us. But we had a little bit of the pressure off, you know, not respecting the winners of each of the conferences, not by any means. You know, we had a tremendous amount of, you know, both fear and worry and respect of playing against these teams that were sight unseen. But I felt like getting over that hurdle and, you know, any mounting pressure of maintaining the undefeated record within the NBL One South, like we'd climbed that mountain, we'd, you know, pitched our flag at the top of it, and this new challenge was like a clean slate to us. So we had one of our best training sessions of the week on the Tuesday night prior to taking off to nationals, because it was like a weight off our shoulders. And, you know, while there was another mountain yet to climb, the one that we'd been, you know, in the thick of trying to summit for, you know, whatever, 14 odd weeks, you know, we were able to finish that chapter of the journey. The challenge that we had with nationals was you're playing against these teams that are coming in, you know, uber successful within their competitions, stylistically very different to the teams that we'd played against within the South Conference. And you're almost back to that ledger of, you know, every team's going to look at you and be like, okay, well, we want to knock off the South team. We want to knock off the team that's undefeated. So you're back to playing against everybody's best shot. And, you know, it's dangerous. The hardest thing to do is win when you're expected to win. And, you know, we play against this Coburn team to begin with, that, you know, you're hearing in the media that they're the best export that WA has had. And, you know, Fleur McIntyre, who's got quite a bit of stature within the basketball community in Coburn and done a tremendous job with the Sydney Kings within her role. She's coming out and saying, well, you know, why can't Coburn win it? And you're like, Jesus, is this team really, really good? Are we about to walk into to something that's going to be akin to a hurricane? So you prepare like a mad person. Like I just rolled through the same level of detail and preparation that we've had for all of our final series, and did that throughout the nationals. So we played against this Coburn team. We're able to play in an unfamiliar format where you had to win each of the quarters. So, you know, even to take any sort of a lead, we spoke to our group and we prepared on the Tuesday night, seeing the first two games as 10 8-minute games, you know, as opposed to two games in, you know, in isolation. And I want to give a shout out to Jeremy O'Toole from Ringwood, who he was the assistant coach a year ago when Ringwood beat us and then represented the South in the national finals. He reached out independently and just said, hey, mate, you know, you've already, you know, been successful here. I don't want to tell you how to do things, but if you want to hear any thoughts about, you know, that format with nationals, what we tried to do, what we would do differently and what we learned, give me a call. So I gave him a call and, you know, spent nearly an hour on the phone with him, being able to pick his brain on what they tried to do. And one of the things that he mentioned was really helpful was having a running score, you know, feedback to the team. So we took that idea and my assistant Nathan Batchelor brought his iPad and, you know, we got a scoreboard app where we, you know, you can see us visibly on the sideline updating the score and holding it up to the team. So they would always know quarter by quarter, you're up 6-4 or what have you, or you're down by 2. So we had that running clock, you know, thanks to the idea from Jeremy. And then he also mentioned that they were imposing a 6 or 8 points threshold. You know, once you got 6 or 8 points up in a quarter, that's when they would start to progressively rest starters. So we made that an 8 or 10 point threshold. And, you know, that was our impetus for giving people rest, you know, where we could, you know, while still being able to try and win the quarter. You know, the one quarter that we dropped all season was against the bloody Northside Wizards, and, you know, and their heck of a basketball team that they came to play with. So they were a handful to deal with in the game that we played against them. So that was a little bit about our journey and how we approached it. I mean, I can continue on. We had I had probably 9 hours sleep, maybe 8.5 hours sleep between the Friday night and Saturday night, because you find out after the game who you're playing the following day, and then you've got to try to source footage. And I learned from Phil Brown, the old AIS coach, to take the prior four games of the opponent, and you know, if you do it the long way, you do it the long way, but you've got to be thorough. You take all of those four games, clip offenses and defenses, and then individual personnel clips as well. And then you start, you know, categorizing them and then distill them down, you know, one by one, because our athletes wanted or were conditioned to be able to go to bed at night, sleep, get up and have their morning coffee or brekkie out together and have these, you know, four games, at an hour and a half a clip, games distilled down to 2 to 4 minutes of video for personnel, and then 2 to 4 minutes of video for, you know, team tendencies and what they like to run, you know, the highest frequency. Were there any curveballs that they identify all of these things and put together this footage on Little Sleep, and then be able to deliver a game plan to them verbally, but then also in a morning shoot around. We did that twice over, you know, for Northside Wizards, and then in the final against Norths. And it was before the Norths game that night. You know, we beat Northside, we get home, you know, everybody takes a nap, we go out and order dinner, and I'm trying to download all of these games for Norths, and my laptop dies and I'm trying to reboot it, and within 30 seconds it switches off again, and I'm like, well, it's done this once before, but why is it picking now of all times to be temperamental? Like, I've got to get my head into this video. We're about to play off for a national championship. Like, I know nothing about this team. Anyway, long story short, the laptop has no success over the 2 hours that I try to get it going. So I had to borrow Cass McLean's MacBook to be able to put together all of this footage. And I'd done a little bit of prep. So the, you know, 40 to 60 minutes that I'd done on North, I had lost all of that and had to start all of that from scratch. So I, you know, I think I got another 4 hour night of sleep that night, to be able to prepare for this Norths team that's had a tremendous amount of success. Again, was different stylistically to the teams that we'd played. So, you know, how do we adapt our, you know, our defensive rules within our system to be able to fit this, you know, in a way that's not going to freak the team out, but, you know, you're going to be able to leverage the things that you already know and do well in a way that's going to fit and try to blow up some of their actions or make life really difficult. And I think, you know, I think we did that. You know, we were able to force them away from key personnel early. The personnel that we were happy to live with, you know, shots by, made shots early on, but, you know, history would suggest that basketball always comes down to percentages, and, you know, they regressed to the mean over time. And, you know, we really put the clamps on in the third quarter and had a tremendous quote unquote premiership quarter, where I think we held them to 16 points and scored 34 of our own. You know, thus demonstrating, I think Jamie O'Loughlin, who's been a mentor of mine for a long time, and was on commentary for the game, you know, said it perfectly, that these types of games, you know, where you're playing against teams relatively sight unseen or, you know, with small levels of preparation, it's a test, one, of your team culture, but then two, the robustness of your system. And, you know, I phrase it like, I think our offensive and defensive system were built in bricks and mortar. And to speak to what I mentioned earlier, the season prior, we had the number one offense and the number eight defense. After 22 games or 25, when you include the finals, we had the number one offense and the number one defense. So, you know, achieving our goal of wanting to be better on that side of the ball, we ticked that box. So we knew that we could leverage, you know, tangible success that we've had against other good teams like Norths, you know, and we've been able to stand up against, you know, the most difficult of storms, and, you know, we're able to come away with a national championship on the back of it. So, you know, there's an element of luck within that, but, you know, also an element of tremendous forethought, tremendous detail, and a heck of a lot of hard work and buy-in and camaraderie and culture within the group that, you know, these are words that get bandied about, but, you know, it's games like that and national finals or games like our South Grand Final that, you know, they're the litmus test of, you know, are these things BS because they're a great line or are they true living things? And, you know, for us, they were.
Great. Great insight into what it actually took. And look, as a MBL One North, I'm very biased towards my MBL One North, so I don't completely agree with, you know, what you said originally about how MBL One South is, you know, the greatest, even though you guys came away with two championships this year. It's hard to hear with my biases that, you know, North isn't the greatest. But you can't argue with your results this year. It really was fantastic. Moving on to that the grand final at the National. Obviously, it was a tighter game going into half, and then after half time, you guys really just were able to stretch it out. And my real sort of question is, you know, at what point did you allow you and the team sort of allow yourself to basically believe, yep, the game, we've done it. You know, we're here. We are the national champions. Is it right at full time? Did it happen a little bit earlier? Well, what was actually, you know, the mindset there? What was going through your head?
Yeah, so there's probably two parts, my own approach and the team's holistic approach. I think one of the things that has been a bit of a mantra for us has been, you know, two words, keep playing. You know, that no matter what the scoreline is, you keep playing every possession on its merits. And I know that, you know, this is very cliche to sort of say, but you know, it's a difficult thing to condition when you're managing, you know, different points in the game, score lines. You know, you're trying to battle what is human instinct in a lot of ways. But we drove a lot of that message throughout the course of the season, and, you know, emphasized it within practice. You know, to the point where, you know, there was commentary throughout the season that either my approach or the team's approach, you know, affectionately was, you know, we're ruthless, we're competitive right till the very, very finish. And, you know, I'm happy for us to have that, you know, type of a badge. It's a compliment that, you know, our teams were competitive through every possession of every game and never rested on our laurels. So I was proud that we had that. I think the team themselves, you know, once, you know, we were able to, I think it was with probably about 1 to 1.5 to 2 minutes to go, you know, we did the big 5-on-5 off substitution. That was when they really started to not celebrate, because they're so invested in each other's success that they were still encouraging you know, and being able to instruct the athletes that were on the floor and, you know, living the final moments of the game through them. But I think that was when, you know, they were able to accept that, you know, we've finally done this. For myself, it didn't get caught on camera. It got caught in some of the images, but I mean, I'm a basketball tragic in life, and, you know, I hope that shines through in the conversations that we have, and certainly, you know, my longevity in the game and the amount of my life that I've traded for the coaching space and trying to push forward women's sport and push forward, you know, the WNBL and now the NBL One, you know, as the fantastic product that it is, and, you know, the fantastic athletes that we have that deserve more recognition and more remuneration and praise for what they achieve and what they have achieved. It all hit me with about 3 minutes to go. So I'm in full game mode. I'm standing down the far side of the court. I'm watching us play at the other end down in front of the North's bench. And I look up at the scoreboard and we're up 31 points with 3 minutes to go. And, you know, I have this running thing in my head that's, again, a statistical measure that if you're up by more points than there are minutes left in the game, you generally have, I believe it's from a study, an 89% win record of whatever block of time that study was. And I'm like, they couldn't possibly, I had to rationalize with myself, they couldn't possibly score 32 points in 3 minutes and pip us at the post, could they? Like, we're over the line here. And I became overwhelmed with emotion. Like, my lips started to quiver and I just started crying my eyes out. that a response that I would have never thought that I would have had, because 2 weeks prior, you know, winning the prelim final at Bendigo Stadium over a really talented Mount Gambier team in front of 1,500 people, my response was like elation. I ran and I jumped. There's a photo of me leaping in the air, pumping my fist in excitement. But I became overwhelmed that, you know, 19 years in the coaching space, so half my life ago at age 38, it's all come to this. And, you know, you're getting the opportunity to share this incredible moment where you're a national champion, you're undefeated, with such a tremendous amount of quality human beings, role models for basketballers of any, you know, age, level, gender, race, what have you, and knowing what it means to the Bendigo community that you're part of. Like, I've met my wife here, we've got a firstborn child. So, you know, Bendigo in a lot of ways has become home, or, you know, even if we have a move at some point for basketball, you know, probably still be home at the end of all of that. But it was overwhelming, and I just became overcome with tears, and I'm bawling my eyes out there trying to hold it in and show it. And then, you know, our team, because we're such a tight-knit group, we had two athletes notice this, and then their sympathy tears started. So then the others on the bench saw them crying, looked at me crying, they started crying. And it just, it was a cascading effect of, you know, just a wonderful moment. I mean, I'm not afraid to show my emotion and share any vulnerabilities. I think, you know, one of the things that makes me authentic as a coach is that I'm, you know, honest, transparent, and an open book, and prepared to share, you know, everything that I organically feel with the group. And that was the juxtaposition of the way the team looked at it, and, you know, the way that it hit me pretty hard. You know, on an emotional level, the gravity of what we were able to achieve. I mean, even now, it still doesn't seem real. It's in a lot of ways, I describe it as a fairy tale Disney movie, because these sorts of runs aren't supposed to happen, especially with the camaraderie and the connectedness of the group. But in a lot of ways, because you alluded to last year's grand final loss, it's a redemption story as well, you know, all rolled into one, but it's real life.
Yeah, look, I it's really hard to nail down an exact movie to really ping it to, but look, you never know. You never know. There might be a Hollywood story out of this. I mean, it is genuinely an amazing thing to just win nationals, let alone, you know, to go undefeated. It's we may not see it again. It's one of those magical things. But look, mate, in your time at Bendigo Braves, it's impossible to genuinely rattle off every single name, I know, but who are some of the players' journeys that you feel as if you're sort of proud of in the sense that you've been able to help them? Like I said, it's an impossible question. I know you can't name them all. We'd be here for 3 years. But who are some of those names that you feel as if you've helped along in their basketball journey?
It's a great question. And I mean, clearly I can be very verbose. I love to talk. So I could name a ton, but I think, you know, the couple that come to mind. So obviously the journey that Megan McKay has gone on has been nothing but historic this past 12 months. The ones that I referred to as the OGs, so Cass McLean was coming off an ACL injury when I recruited her to come back to Bendigo. So she was with the Bendigo Spirit the year prior, had fallen kind of out of favor and was on the back end of WNBL franchises. To see how far she's come in the quality of her play and the completeness of her as a basketballer, she deserves to be in the WNBL and in a rotation right now. There's not a doubt in my mind. Maddie Sexton, who was the on-ramping player that I mentioned, Bendigo Braves Junior, that came back and said, "I'll start wherever I am, you know, meet me as a learner where I'm at and take me on the next steps," you know, for her to be able to have the match winning play in the grand final. That makes me really proud. Kelly Wilson has been a joy to work with, and for all that she's been able to achieve in her longevity, you know, over 21 years within elite basketball and the games record holder in the WNBL, for us to be able to be part of or provide her with an opportunity where an undefeated season, winning a championship and a national championship, it's something she's never done before, to sort of present something new for her at this stage in her career. I'm proud of that. And then I guess lastly, you know, there's been four athletes that have come to the Bendigo Braves in my time here. And, you know, I'm known within the basketball space for skill development and being able to take an athlete where they are and bring them on the next steps. You know, and I was able to do that with Beck Colley years gone by with the Melbourne Tigers. So she was a backup point guard with the Melbourne Boomers, the bridging year of 6 months with me, working out 5 days a week at 6 a.m. To shore up some holes within her game and then accentuate some positives. She went second in MVP voting the very next year with Dandenong. But there's four athletes that had not been part of the Opals program at all, or hadn't been for a very long time, that have come to Bendigo with this same assertion to work out with me on a daily basis, that had become Opals from this 6 months that they'd spent within the program. So one was Tess Madgen, who had fallen out of the Opals picture through a Brave season with me and working out 5 days a week, became, you know, part of that Tokyo Olympic team, and then is now known as the Opals captain, incredibly deserving. And I'd say to her all the time, she's a cut from the cloth of the Michelle Timms and Robin Mars, you know, the ones that were in the ground floor of what it is to be an Opal. You know, she's bringing that back, you know, with her example. Abby Wareung came here, had never been part of the Opals, within the same type of time period, represented the Opals in the FIBA Asia Cup in, I believe it was 2021. Megan McKay had been out of the picture, had never been within the Opals, got a call up to play for them in an exhibition series a year ago against Japan in China for the course of a fortnight. And then Amy Atwell, she's the next in the line, came in and she said, "I want you to help me get to the next level. I want to become an Opal." And has now, you know, she's a demon to work out with 5 days a week. She'd work out twice a day, you know, if she could. We've been able to shore up or add pieces to her game, take away some, you know, some of the things that needed building, accentuate some of the positives and take them to a next level. And she's represented the Opals now at the FIBA Asia Cup this past cup just gone, and is currently away with the Opals on a tour of China. So one of the things that's most pleasing for me is not only with the team success that we've had, which is fantastic, and, you know, we all strive to achieve it, but we've been able to build in 3 years here a program, and, you know, us/me, myself as a coach in the direction, and then my willingness to work with athletes and weaving in my expertise in the skill development space, interweave an environment where individuals can achieve their own accolades and career aspirations individually, interwoven with team success, which is incredibly challenging to do. And, you know, and it's a fine line all the time. It's a bit of a juggling act, but, you know, we've been able to do it for 3 years running, and, you know, and graduate players to the national team, which, you know, I'm incredibly proud of. And, you know, as a coach, you know, we exist to selflessly serve these athletes and help them to get where they want to go to. And, you know, by doing that, you know, in essence, it gives us an opportunity to hopefully be able to reach our own career aspirations, you know, that come as a secondary byproduct of that.
Mate, that sort of brings us kind of to the end. Thank you for that. Like I said, it was an impossible question. I think you really nailed it. It's always great to, you know, stand back and applaud, especially as a coach. That is the role, to, you know, to help people move on. And, you know, there are people who really stand out for us, you know, as we then are given the opportunity to look back at different times. But if you got a little bit of time left, I've got a couple more just quick fire questions to hit you with. It's been a little while since we had you on the show. So, yep. Look, you talked about women's basketball, of course. You know, you've been huge part of, obviously, with the Braves, and obviously long-standing member in the WNBL coaching paternity. So can you give me your top five women's players of all time, your top five?
I'll go even more specific. Ooh, and, like and say Yeah, I'll say the, you know, if there can be five on a Mount Rushmore, which is normally four, if there can be five athletes that I've really, really enjoyed coaching and working with, you know, for their professionalism and what they stand for, we'll dial back to, we'll stay with the Queensland vibe, my time with the Townsville Fire, and say Mia Murray. She lasts in my mind for professionalism and, you know, the preparedness to do whatever the team needs without any semblance of ego. She's as first class as there is. We'll say Tess Madgen. Absolutely. You know, I describe her as a, if a lion and a basketballer had a baby, it's Tess Madgen. She's ultra competitive, but does so in a way that raises your level along with her. You know, she's incredibly galvanizing with her her example. Kelly Wilson, you know, anytime that somebody can be, you know, ultra successful in spite of, you know, physical stature or physical attributes, you know, there's something to that. There's something special about that. And my coaching philosophy has always been the strong take from the weak, but the smart take from the strong. And she embodies that, you know, perfectly. Oh gosh, now it's going to be challenging. Let's go Megan McKay. You know, I've got recency bias in mind. Megan McKay, purely, you know, I think highly underrated and, you know, gets looked over, needs to be part of the Opals program, gets looked over purely because she's a back to the basket post, running post that leads the break and seals. And for whatever reason, somewhere somebody has decided that that player doesn't fit the modern game. So we're judging, you know, a fish by its ability to climb a tree. But if you put the fish in water, it can absolutely excel. And, you know, I think we've given her the platform to be able to do that and put her in positions to be successful where her talent has been able to take over. And she's demonstrated that in this past NBL one season. And then I'm going to say, again, recency bias, Cass McLean, you know, for a redemption story to come from where she was being a fringe in and out emerging player with the Sydney Uni Flames in 2016-17. And we won a championship together. To see the journey of, you know, not only her game continue to emerge, but her psyche change. You know, the any thought of being inferior to anybody to now being confident in her ability and the journey she's gone on to be the person she is, the elite defender and the complete player that she is. She deserves to be on a WNBL roster. There's no doubt in my mind, and you know, I'm proud of her emergence, and I think the best is yet to come for her too.
All righty. Favorite player position and why?
Well, basketball, while there are positions, you know, they're very positionless. So, you know, the system that I run, the shuffle offense, puts point guards in the position to be able to post up, puts centers, so to speak, facing the basket on the three-point line. So everybody can play anywhere. But I think, you know, the bias of the level of thinking outside yourself, I have to lean towards the point guard position, is my favorite. It's, you know, commonly referred to as the extension of the coach on the floor. You have to be able to, you know, perform your role, but then see the game outside of yourself, and be really selfless in, your service to other people. So I like that.
Yeah. Look, I have to agree. I like it too. I love me a big who can think though. Big with a basketball IQ, because I always played the big position as a little fella. As it turned out, I was, you know, never going to be tall timber, but as a young fella, I always played the big. So I've got some, I always have that feeling of, you know, oh, the bigs, but the bigs who can think. They're the ones I love. But I definitely see your point. All right, we talked about Disney movies earlier. So do you have a favorite Disney movie?
Oh, gosh, that's a tough one. Look, it's going to be completely unrelated to basketball, but okay. Purely because this was such a part of my childhood. I was a big fan of Pinocchio back in the day. I used to watch that on VHS nonstop as a young lad. It was the first VHS that I owned.
Love the VHS. All right, mate. Well, you've gone to the national champs. You've gone through undefeated. Hollywood comes a-calling. Who are you getting to play yourself?
That's another great question. Let's go. Funny enough, I mean, probably not with the man bun that I'm rocking these days, but a long time ago, people used to think that I looked like Orlando Bloom. Remember him?
I do remember him. Yep. For a second there, I thought you were going to say like Dwayne the Rock Johnson. I was like, oh, not another one. No.
Yeah, no. I mean, for authenticity, yeah. We might have to say that because, I mean, I go by the moniker, the Count. In Victorian basketball circles, there was a thought that because I'm so smiley and happy all the time, whatever reason, that I looked like Count Von Count from Sesame Street. So if I can't have a puppet play me, if it's not that type of a film, we'll go with Orlando Bloom.
Hey, it's Disney, mate. Give them a couple of weeks. They might buy out Sesame Street. All right. Look, Faye, last sort of question of this chunk is, if you could go back this season and watch any game, you didn't have to coach, you didn't have to prep, you could just go along as a fan and watch the game of Bendigo Braves, which Bendigo Braves game of the season would you go back and watch?
The runner-up would be when we played Waverley mid-season and we won by 46 points. So not that it was a blowout, but it was by far, you know, our best defensive performance of the year to keep that talented scoring lineup to what it was. That's the runner-up. But by far, I'd have to say our semi-final at Bendigo Stadium, prelim final at Bendigo Stadium against Mount Gambier. Incredible arm wrestle, incredible chess match, two high-performing women's teams with a display of A-list women's basketball in front of 1,500 people in a stadium in Bendigo for a standalone women's sporting game. Yeah, incredible atmosphere to be part of. Great validation for the level that the sport has within not only Bendigo, but for the NBL1 as a competition, but basketball in our country. I mean, women's basketball here is the envy of the world, and you know, this display of two heavyweights just duking it out in a really close outfit that was an arm wrestle from start to finish, that was an epic one to be part of, and I'd love to go back and be able to watch it from a fan's perspective. And you know, the level of noise that there was in the crowd, it was a game that, you know, got spoken about within the media, and you know, even had people from other states tweeting about it. You know, that's the level of quality lineups that you had out on the floor and the level of basketball that was being played.
Nice. Great answer. Love it. All right, mate, final question before I let you go this evening. Simplest question in the world in theory. Who should we have on Ball Don't Lie Australia next?
Ooh, fantastic question. I'm going to give, if it's not someone from Bendigo, I'm going to give a handball to my mate on the West Coast, Ryan Petrick. I think fascinating guy, a friend of mine within the industry, is prepared to sit outside the cookie cutter of the way you know, coaches are taught the game or expected to play it, and prepared to think outside the box bravely and back himself in, but then also concurrently coaches the Rockingham Flames men's team in the NBL1, yeah, and the Perth Lynx. So the juxtaposition of the two leagues, men's and women's basketball, and then also being a free thinker that should be part of, with his success, should be part of the Opals coaching panel, in my opinion, a fascinating person to be able to hear perspective from. So I'm going to dob him in.
Fantastic answer again, mate. Thank you. Thank you very much for your time. Congratulations again, of course, to you and the whole Bendigo Braves Association. As we've said on the show many times, it's never just one person who does these things. It takes an entire association, especially to do something as special as you guys have been able to put together. So thank you again for your time this evening.
Anytime, and appreciate you and the crew for all you do to promote basketball, promote the NBL1, and especially, you know, from a position of bias, women's sport. It's a rising tide, and it's been fantastic for a long time, and I'm glad that it's getting the ears and the eyeballs on it that it's deserved for, you know, far too long.
At the Capitals, does the ball ever lie, Steph?
Never, ever.
Once again, a huge thank you to Mark for joining us. Like I said, absolutely amazing run, completely undefeated. It's, you don't hear of that kind of stuff. There's always a loss in there somewhere, it feels like. So Huge congratulations, of course, to the Bendigo Braves once more. All right, that's going to wrap us up this week. As I said, Crackham will be back next week. Local card shop of Woolloongabba / Mermaid Beach. Crackham, of course. Huge shout out to Rob and the team down there at the local card shop. And, of course, can't forget our other sponsor in of PCR Maps. Excuse me. If you need your business ranking on Google Maps, make sure you jump onto PCRmaps.com and they'll sort you out with that straight away. It'll be super fast and really great team to deal with there at PCR Maps. That's going to wrap us up for another week. Episode 136 in the bag. We'll be back next week with, of course, some a little bit more of a deeper dive into the Boomers World Cup, and we'll talk Opals as well. And of course, we'll be back with some local card shop / Mermaid Beach Crackham. But until then, please do jump on the socials, give us those likes, those follows, those shares, all that kind of stuff. We love it. But until you're listening to us here again, just remember, that ball don't lie.